Chapter 35. That awkward morning after.
I am still here, Kyrus mused, blinking up at the wooden beams of the ceiling above him.
He lay on his back in his bunk aboard the Free Trader, feeling the roll of the ship beneath him. He ached everywhere, and his left arm felt the break that Brannis's had in it, though he could tell that his own was intact. He looked over to the door and in his ether vision found it to be intact with its wards undisturbed. Kyrus sat up and looked around in the ether to see what befell aboard the ship. He saw sailors bustling all about, no different than any other day he had seen since taking to the seas himself. If there was unease about the ship's wizard, they were betraying no sign of it. The deck was being cleaned. There were men in the rigging, and the galley was manned with cook and hungry sailor alike. Kyrus could not see the whole of the ship from his quarters, so he could not check on the whereabouts of Captain Zane, and he was fairly certain he did not want to go looking for him either.
What would I even say?
There were 12 men in his immediate company who had died in Captain Zane's hands, and Juliana had narrowly avoided being another of his victims.
I will spare your life here, and you will spare me there, Jinzan had said.
Was it even binding? Brannis had agreed to nothing, and Kyrus certainly had not been there. Where was the line between Kyrus and Brannis, between Captain Zane and Jinzan? Kyrus had much to think about before he opened that warded door and left the cozy safety of his cabin. If Captain Zane bore him ill will from their encounter in Vaedris, Kyrus knew he had best leave prepared to do battle.
No, that is ludicrous. I must remember that here, I am the sorcerer. Jinzan may know 1,000 tricks of ether for all I care, and Captain Zane can manage none of that. He would be a fool to try anything to harm me.
Kyrus examined the ward, tattooed into the flesh of his shoulder. It glowed reassuringly in his ether vision, its protections solid and unyielding. Of the warnings of dire peril that Captain Zane had predicted, Kyrus still noticed nothing. If ether were being drawn into the ward directly from his source, he was none the worse for it.
Maybe my source is just a bit stronger than Jinzan's, and better able to shrug off the additional burden. Captain Zane has always seemed impressed with my source and how powerful it supposedly is.
Kyrus had tried looking in the mirror, but mirrors only reflected the light, not ether. It was awkward trying to view his own source, some quirk of how source and ether vision interacted that prevented him getting a good look at his own. The best he could do was infer. There seemed in general to be more ether about his person than he saw near others, and when it came time to draw it, it came readily and speedily to his call. All other aspects of his source, any that needed direct observation, were obscured to him. Was he so different from Jinzan, who rivaled the Inner Circle members in power? Brannis had heard tell of Iridan's
battle with Captain Zane's alter ego,
having both reports and first-hand accounts of how the battle went on all fronts before taking his slumber. Though tired and worn down, Iridan had drawn against Jinzan and lost, saved only by the quick-thinking illusionist Phelan.
Would that it had been Rashan who crossed Jinzan's path, and not just Iridan. I could suffer Captain Zane's presence in good conscience if I did not have to worry that he worked against my homeland and friends in another world.
In theory, Kyrus knew that dispatching the captain of the Free Trader would have been a simple matter. Neither pistol
nor blade
nor the presence of 40 loyal sailors could stop Kyrus, and the loyalty of so new a crew was a paltry thing when asked to stand in the way of a sorcerer with murderous intent. But that was the rub. Murder. Kyrus had been wronged in no way by Denric Zane. Indeed, he had been helped at many turns by the captain and his associates. Brannis had even been explicitly spared by Jinzan, who by all rights ought to have obliterated them all before using a transference spell to flee the mines. Kairos' stomach growled, reminding him that no matter the moral dilemma, he could not remain in his cabin indefinitely. Outside on deck, the men sang a song that reminded him of the ones Juliana had them singing on the way to Rainsdark. Kairos would much rather have been there, in the wreckage of Rainsdark, than isolated and alone on a Magrin sorcerer's ship.
Ha ha! So I was right to think he was lying to us, Stalyart grinned.
The first mate sat straddling one of the chairs in the captain's cabin, his crossed arms resting on the back of it.
So everything else went according to your plan?
Largely, yes. I did not stay to witness the battle's end, but there was a dragon and a warlock back from the dead there, and I did not wish to risk the staff's safety around either of them. Once I got it, I got myself out by magic and back to Magrin lands. I sleep right now in my very own bed for the first time in months. In the morning, it will be a hero's reception for me again, Denric said, letting out a satisfied sigh. Denric Zane was a hard, solitary man, but Jinzan at least had known love in his life.
So what is our little sorcerer like in the other world, hmm? I admit I had guessed him to be a useless noble son, seventh in line to some worthless scrap of Cadran, with the fencing tutor who had taught him to use a blade. Bookish, timid, much like our Kairos, that was my guess. Oh, but how wrong, eh? Stalyart joked.
He had little stake in the war between Cadran and Magrin, certainly nothing beyond just the financial gain to be had in supplying foreign-bred mounts and iron ore for their military efforts.
He tried to bargain with me, offered to take me alive and guaranteed my safety if I gave myself up. Typical Cadran ploy. I bet they would have had my throat before dawn. No, I read my history. No fop shall be made of me in the stories written about the fall of Cadran. I bartered my life here for his twin's life there. I slew the rest of his companions, save for one slip of a sorceress that he shielded with his body. I took a moment's panic, thinking I had killed him accidentally, but his armor was warded strongly and turned aside my attack. I know not what Kairos would have done if I had slain his twin, and once I realized he would sacrifice himself to save the girl, I spared her as well. That boy has violence within him, even if it is not at the surface. I still worry that he might not hold to his end.
What would we do if he did not? Stalyart asked, shrugging. You saw the smoke from the fires in Marker's Point. 11 men, he said. Would it make a difference if it had been 100? We have no sorcerer here to balance against him. My advice to you is better now than before. Befriend him. You know his secret now. Let the tide wash the footprints from the sand. Make new ones. Are you Jinzan? Is he the Cadran knight you saw? Let him search the ship all he likes. The staff of Galen is not here. He can choose a life of drinking and whoring and plundering, or he can slink off to the hills of some desolate backwater to make his home away from those who would shun him as a witch.
And what if he decides he can make himself a king? Denric countered. Surely people will fear and shun him, but let him slay an army, and they will kneel to him. I doubted the boy had it in him, but I bet you that knight does. That means Kairos is capable as well. There is no mistaking. The lessons of the one would carry into the other. You explained that one to me. The rule of the twin-born, you called it.
Then do not let him think of the possibility. Make a grand gesture of your acceptance of him. Make him truly your friend. Then maybe he does not think of running and conquering. Oh, and I understand, too, if he decides he is a lion among kittens. We are dead men the day he chooses to leave us. We would be just an angry tantrum as he carves an empire of his own. Men who knew too much.
I will have to think on it, Denric muttered, half to himself. Stalyart took that as a sign he ought to be going and stood up.
One last thing, Stalyart. Has Kairos left his cabin yet today?
I shall check, but I have not seen him yet this morn, Stalyart replied.
What can I do?
Denric wondered, as soon as the door shut behind his friend and first mate. The door provided no answer as he stared at it. He was suddenly wary of that door. Somewhere on the other side was a man who might well feel wronged by him, or at least stood as a mortal enemy, kingdom to empire, not far away. Will today be my end?
Not at the gibbet,
but at the hands of an angry Kadrin sorcerer. Will he weigh the life I spared in the mines of Rainsdark against my own life here? If it were me, I would honor the bargain, even though I had not agreed to it. A man's life is not his own to barter at times like that. I had his life in my hands and gave it back to him. Does a Kadrin even have enough honor to understand that debt? Denric felt the comforting shape of the pistol in his belt and ran a hand along it. Fool or not, that ward makes this pistol a condemned man's last resort. Source like his, he is unlikely to let that ward of his falter, especially after what has transpired. No amount of staring at the cabin door was going to change his fate, but Denric tried nonetheless. Kyrus ate his morning meal in the mess, keeping to himself. After the previous night's display, which Kyrus had nearly forgotten about after the war he had witnessed in his dreams, few were eager to share his company. Even Jiminy, who had tried to warm to Kyrus in order to be shielded beneath his aura of power and influence with the captain, took his own meal at another table. Kyrus poked his spoon a bit at a lackluster fish stew. How anyone could undersalt saltwater fish was beyond him, but ate little. He caught a glimpse of Stalyart, but there was no sign that the captain was about. Is he afraid of me? Kyrus wondered. The ship's first mate had made no eye contact with Kyrus, and that was unusual for the outgoing and boisterous Southlander. There was shouting up on deck, but Kyrus could not make out what was going on. He could see sources congregating outside the captain's quarters. Curiosity started picking off the others in the mess as they went to see what was going on above. Kyrus sat at the table, mindlessly staring into his stew, until he was the last remaining.
Everyone on deck.
Captain's orders, came a shout from above.
Kyrus could only imagine that his presence had been missed. If it was to be a call for his head or a duel between him and the captain, so be it. Kyrus steeled himself and pushed away his bowl. As he started for the stairs, he checked his ward for what must have been the 20th time since he awoke. It was still fine, and he added a bit of ether to it to be safe. Thinking on it, he also drew a bit of ether to hold on to. Kyrus was getting used to retaining ether for emergencies, out of habit, and was to the point where it barely burned to hold it anymore. Even without any proper spells for battle, simple fire hurling would be enough to defend him against any of the ship's inhabitants.
All right, men, Kyrus heard as he reached the top of the stairs. Captain Zane was holding court from the aft castle, addressing his men like a king from a palace balcony. Gather round. This is a joyous time. Look at you all, Denric shouted, grinning. A proper pirate crew if I ever saw one. It had been too long since I had seen the likes of you. We will make our mark upon the world. Men will fear us. The sound of the name Fair Trader will be spoken in reverent whispers among the seafaring merchants, much as Honest Merchant once was. But today, tonight, we will make for a gentler port. Tonight, we will feast in Denku Appa. A cheer rose up from the scattering of the men, those worldly enough to have known or heard of the tiny island. Kyrus had seen it on the ship's maps, but knew little of it. It was but one strange name among many, a lone island,
far from most others,
though close enough to Marker's Point that they were reaching it in just 2 days at sea. So I gather that some of you have heard of Denku Appa, but not all. Captain Zane continued once the cheer had died down. Men were continuing to press closer about the deck below where he held court, while Kyrus kept to the back of the assembly. There was an energy about the captain that Kairos had not seen before. He had realized the charisma of the captain not long after their proper introduction, but he seemed to have enthralled his men, though Kairos saw no hint of tampering with them in the ether. For those who have not, it is a paradise. The natives who live there are friendly, and their hospitality is unmatched. We will drink and feast and take the company of their women, and all for the price of a little steel, which they cannot make themselves.
Tell more about them women,
someone shouted. There were murmurs and shouts of agreement, and so the captain did as Kairos watched. He felt detached, wondering how the men of the crew could be so gullible. You would really sell your lives to this man for the chance at primitive women and shoddily distilled liquor. It was a magic that Kairos did not know, but which he envied. It was the power to plant seeds in men's minds and make them grow into ideas that they think are their own. It was like planting a garden of dreams. Ask a man what he wants in life, and there are many who would answer, riches, drink, and the company of many beautiful women. Not every man dreams so simply or so crudely, but Denric Zane need only choose his crew from among those who do. And where do I fit in among these? Can I even truly dream? Or is it not a dream in quite that sense? If it is just to unlock the key to the heart's desires, all I want is to find a way to be with Abelay again. The rest, it would work itself out, and I could be content however it befell. By the time the captain had finished, the crew was clamoring to get to Denku Appa and sate their gluttony and lusts among the welcoming savages who lived there. Kairos wondered what it would actually be like once they got there. Could enough rum allow a man to imagine a primitive paradise where there is only squalor? Could dreams make a spit-charred grouper taste of lemon-brushed salmon? Or an awkward and nervous native girl seem an exotic temptress? Captain Zane was promising a garden of malai, and there was no way he would be able to deliver all he boasted of. Like the merchants Kairos had met in Acardia, there was an art to such selling that he just could not fully wrap his mind about. As the speech finished, Captain Zane ordered the men back about their work, and they complied eagerly, excited by the prospect of exotic island delights by nightfall, if they kept their course and speed. They pushed and jostled as too many men moved about the deck to get to where they were headed. None touched Kairos. There was an area about him that might well have been forged of steel, a pillar into which no man could enter. It was magic that managed it, but not of the ethereal sort. Kairos had them scared of him. Glances did not linger on him, lest a sailor make accidental eye contact, save for one. Denric Zane locked gazes with Kairos and gave him an even look, not betraying any intent but interest. As the last of the men were clearing the area of the aft castle, the captain yelled down, just loudly enough for Kairos to hear clearly, "Mr. Hinterdale, a word in my cabin, if you will." It was an order, but a politely delivered one. Kairos did not see Stalyard lingering about, so he wondered if it was to be a private conversation, with no ally ready at hand. Kairos kept his walk slow as he crossed to the door of the captain's cabin, hanging back long enough for Captain Zane to make the walk down from the castle and meet him at his own door without having to wait. "Come in, come in," Denric gestured as he entered his own quarters. Kairos followed and closed the door behind him. He knew his ward was still ready in case of treachery, but the captain's jovial mood did not suddenly shift once they were alone, as he had feared it would. "Ah, Kairos, that was marvelous," the captain beamed. "Which do you mean?" Kairos asked. He was unused to the captain being jolly, but it was all he could think to describe the mood he saw. There was wine set out at the captain's private table and two stout goblets made of silver, inlaid with rubies. Captain Zane slumped into one of the chairs and threw his feet up onto the table. He took one of the goblets and drank deeply, then gestured for Kyrus to join him.
I mean everything, Denric stated. What has gone awry for me these past weeks? A month ago, I was sitting in a prison cell on Relis Island in Tellurac and treating with goblins in Vaedrus, trying to get them to go to war with my enemies. Today, I have my own ship, practically smelling of fresh
paint and filled with new cannons.
And I have secured the staff of Galen and begun the downfall of the Cadran Empire.
Seems a bit premature to gloat, do you not think? Kyrus asked. You may have your staff, but at what cost? Any allies you might have had among the goblins are dead. Rashan Solaran has returned and taken over his duties as warlock of the Empire, and has already slain a dragon and routed an army. Kyrus saw Denric's brow furrow at the mention of a dead dragon, momentarily cracking the facade of joviality he presented.
Staff or no staff, you fled rather than face him. If you thought you could stand against him, you ought to have done it right there, before he knew you possessed it. Now that chance is gone. Life here is good, I shall not deny, but you have more troubles than you think in Vaedrus.
Before you decide that I have troubles in this world after all, let me assure you of one thing. This world is not Vaedrus. The dead feel no pain. I will shed no tears for my slain allies. They serve their purpose, and in truth, their company had worn on me awfully. I suspected the battle was lost when I puzzled out that it was truly your dead warlock reborn. I bear no ill will toward you for whatever role you play in the Cadran army, or the defeat of my clever little associates, although I do begrudge you the Cadran habits that seep over into you from the other world. I may have called you a brigand, but that was Jinzan speaking, and to whomever your twin may be, not you. If you do not mind me asking, what is your name in the other world? Who are you? Mind you, every word I have spoken about my life in Vaedrus has borne true, while you have confronted me with lie upon lie. Have it out. Who was the man I spared in Rainsdark's mines? Denric said. And the word Rainsdark sounded so odd to Kyrus with its Cadran sound to it, spoken in Akkadian.
The truth?
Kyrus supposed it was past hiding at this point. I am Sir Brannis Solaran, Grand Marshal of the Imperial Army.
Denric shook his head and gave a small smile.
Fine. If you do not wish to tell me, then...
No, that is the truth of it. That armor that saved my life from whatever spell you intended for everyone else? It was from the personal collection of the Emperor, once worn in battle by Liad the Only. Not ruined, but ether-forged. I was the one who matched wits with your goblin allies, the one who escaped Kelvi Forest to warn of your approach and to put a ready army at the walls of Rainsdark when you arrived, cannons in tow.
Perhaps this time it is the truth after all. Well then... Let us toast to a friendship in this world while we begin our rivalry in the other. I say this, let this ship be as an embassy of the Cadran Empire. We can treat here with no hint of our activity showing among our own allies and keep each other apprised of diplomatic messages.
House Solaran, you say? Denric mused. It seems they have gone downwind in their pursuit of sorceress perfection. I think they made you too good. And when your source broke in half from the strain, the whale share ended up here, rather than in Cadran. You tell me that Rashan Solaran is returned among you, but I think I would more greatly fear Kyrus Solaran, properly trained among those of the Imperial Circle. You may lack for guile and ruthlessness compared with him.
But they would have put that into you at the Academy had you shown this sort of promise.
In fact, I did attend the Academy. They expected much of me given my birthright, and for some time suffered my slow development in magic before casting me out. I joined with the knighthood instead, and my family ties came to my advantage only once I met Rashan, Kyrus said. It was he who elevated me to Grand Marshal.
Tell me, what is the monster like? How was it he has kept himself alive so long?
He must be near to 250 by now, Denric asked, leaning toward Kyrus a bit. He is a philosopher and a keen observer, thoughtful and kind. His knowledge and wisdom span centuries, and he teaches and guides. The next moment he is bloody to the elbows with a score of corpses in his wake over some slight or misstep, with a look in his eyes akin to madness, even joy. The moment after, he will calmly resume his pleasant demeanor, as if no one had noticed what he had done. It preys on his thoughts, I think, the rage that lurks inside him, and I think that is why he was away so long, to find some other way of being. As to his longevity, he had found the secret of the demons, of a perfect source that loses no ether. He is a demon now himself, and a monster in both the classical and literal senses, Kyrus said. It felt odd speaking of Rashaan while in Tellurak, since the warlock was so alien to it, a creature of naught but magic in a world that did not even admit the existence of it. Tell me this, Kyrus, why do you follow him, if you see this so clearly? You seem to understand the evils you consort with, the monster who enslaved my homeland 6 generations ago, yet you serve him. Denric seemed perplexed. If you wish him slain, do it yourself with that staff you are so proud of plundering. He killed a dragon, and I cannot count the thousands of goblins. When I fell exhausted into my bed last night, Rashaan Solaran was still chasing down anything that survived in the plains below the city. I am loyal to Kadrin, and for now at least, he is our best weapon against you. I cannot stand against him if I wish to, and at present, I do not wish to, Kyrus said. Well, I shall let it go at that for now. I shall make it my goal to sell you the merits of a free Magrin ruling over Kadrin. You may be too high-born to see it, but your people suffer for the rule of the powerful houses, noble and sorceress alike.
And I intend to see them free,
to live as Magrin do, as equals to be judged on their own merits. I will win you over. I will find what it is you love in life, and you shall have it. You are made of different stuff than those men out there, Denric gestured broadly beyond the walls of his cabin. But I will find your heart's song, and a bard to play it for you. Denric smiled at Kyrus. I bet you cannot find me another Abelay, nor take her aboard the fair trader. You will find no hold over me. The boats held 10 men each, and Kyrus had been summoned to the first one with Captain Zane. They were to head ashore first, to meet with the chieftain of the people on the island. The boat swayed a bit as each man climbed aboard, down the rope ladder over the fair trader's side. 3 nights they had been promised, to take in the pleasures of the island's hospitality. The Denku, for Denku Apa literally meant Denku place, in their own tongue, would be expecting them, having seen the ship from their little fishing boats. The water was placid and calm, with just the slightest of rolls to give any hint of being at sea at all. The ship anchored a ways from shore, as the island was surrounded by reefs and shallow waters all about. The longboats would be the only way to go ashore. Kyrus went with more than a bit of trepidation. He meant to keep his magics to himself. If a cosmopolitan people like the Akkadians could be driven to stake-burning frenzy at the prospect of magic, how much worse would savages react to having a witch in their midst? Kyrus might survive, but what might he wreak in the meantime? Would he kill half his own crew this time? Perhaps the boats? 4 poor men had the unlucky draw to get duty on the oars, and slowly they began making their way to shore. The night air was warm, and the clouds sparse in the starry sky. The moon and starlight sparkled against the tepid waters of the southern Katamic. The sound of the oars rhythmically breaching the water brought to mind memories of illicit visits to Dragon's Eye Island, back in Kadrin, when a younger Kyrus, Brannis, was wooing a younger Juliana Archon. Kyrus smiled, but amid the eager smiles of the lusty sailors about him, its nostalgia felt tainted amid less pure intentions. As they neared the shore, smaller boats came out to meet them and guide them in to shore. These boats were little more than a pair of hollowed tree trunks, lashed together with wooden poles that held them separated by 2 paces or so. In each boat, one of the hollowed trunks carried a small mast and a little triangular sail, little taller than a man's height. The Denku sailors wore little but loincloths and an occasional ornament, a necklace of shark's teeth, a leather bracelet, and they carried small lanterns hung from poles, which they dangled a bit in front of the longboat to light its way. It was an unnecessary gesture on the brightly lit night, but it was just that, a gesture. The native Denku seemed eager to appear welcoming to their visitors. Fires appeared on the shore, lighting areas of broad white sand and casting the small figures gathered around them into sharp contrast. There were scores of the Denku out to greet them once they reached shore. Kyra saw no sign of weapons among them, which he found curious. Even Marker's Point had guns trained on us and boarded the ship before we were allowed in. And one ship is no real threat to them. 40 pirates could slaughter these people, yet they guide us to them with unarmed fishermen? The fires on the beach multiplied as the island's residents continued their preparations. Kyrus tried to guess how many there were among them, but gave up as there were too many obscured in the darkness where the fires did not reach. But the numerous fires were enough that he could begin to make out the plant life that lived not far from the beach. There were brilliant greens of leaf and bush, tall trees that had no leaves at all until very near the top, and little specks of color that must have been flowers, all oranges and reds and yellows. Off to the port side of the boat, they passed a sea-worn rock, jutting from the water. Their guides had veered them around it. Kyrus paid a bit more attention to the surrounding waters after that, and noticed many more rocks not far above the surface. It would be suicide to pilot these waters blindly without guides. Well, aside from the water being warm and us being so close to shore, Kyrus corrected himself. Aside from the late hour and not wishing to sleep wet, it was tempting to swim the waters. Kyrus dragged a hand in the water, feeling the warmth and wondering what creatures might lurk beneath the surface. Drat! Kyrus had once again forgotten and let his vision slip back solely into the light. It was a hard habit to get into, easier aboard ship where his paranoia lent him focus, and the beauty of the night landscape had lulled him into a reverie of light without ether. He willed his vision into the mixed view he wanted to maintain and looked down again. Below the boats, the waters teemed with life. Schools of fish abounded, hundreds of schools, and thousands, perhaps millions of fish. There was a wall of life not far beneath them. It ran in a circle about the island, as far as he could see into the ether. It could only have been the reef. He did not know the draft of the free trader, but it could not possibly have made it over the reef without running aground. Kyrus's musings were again interrupted when the drums began, followed by chanting in a language he did not understand. There was a 5-beat pattern with syncopation. Dum, dum, da-dum, dum. An accompaniment by a clacking of wood on wood. The words did not change much. If it was a song, it seemed only to have perhaps 2 verses, but it sounded festive, and there were at least 100 among the chanters, if not more. They know how to welcome visitors here, Denric spoke quietly to Kyrus. Kyrus had forgotten about his reservations about Captain Zane, caught up in the wonder and mystery of this little island and its inhabitants. Could it be that this place is all that he promised? Kyrus wondered. The party that first greeted them as they pulled the boat ashore was led by a trio of older men. 2 had the look of the island's natives, lean with bronzed skin, smooth, soft features, and round faces, and dark black hair, which they wore close-cropped. They wore nothing but loincloths and trinkets, and their bodies bore numerous tattoos, plainer in style and cruder in form than the ones he had seen in Marker's Point, but he had seen their like among the crew. The third was a gray-bearded northerner, a Cardian by the look of him, dressed like the Denku, loincloth, tattoos, and all. One of the Denku spoke at length in his own language, and the Akkadian translated.
"Welcome back, sir. Cappy wishes to welcome the Zane ship and its crew. His fisherman did not recognize your ship, but he is pleasantly surprised to find it is you."
The one who must have been Cappy spoke again. "He says the feast will begin shortly, once the hunters return. You and your men will share drinks and songs. They may lie with any women who will have them, but warns that they must behave themselves," the Akkadian translated.
"It will not be like last time," Denric assured him. "Wrathbone was hung years ago and is no longer among my crew. Tell Cappy that it is a pleasure, as always, and we have much to trade and much to discuss."
To the rest of his men, he ordered, "And you lot, bring the chest ashore and have it here."
Kairos had not seen the small chest loaded on the longboat.
It had been covered with a canvas tarp to protect against the sea spray and had not attracted his notice. On the other hand, the natives most certainly had caught Kairos's notice. The garb of the men that met them was typical of the Denku, man and woman alike. Not a one of them wore the clothes he would consider adequate to be modestly asleep in his own bed. The women were of all ages, but the old crones and mothers did not catch his eye. It was the younger maids. Whether primitive or not, there was something to a diet of fish and hunted game, combined with an active life, that seemed quite agreeable to the figure. Kairos had been to the museums of Scar Harbor and Golas, and had seen the works of Dard the Lesser and Halle Fellbird, and the Denku women looked much like those statues in form, if not about the face. He had never seen so much of his beloved Abelay as he now saw of these strange women. After the official greeting, the Denku pressed forward to greet the newcomers themselves. There were smiles and indecipherable greetings in the Denku tongue. Two comely young women took Kairos in arm and escorted him toward the fires. Tattooing seemed to be mostly for the menfolk, but the women had decoration of their own. The younger ones especially liked to dye their hair fanciful colors. The one who had hold of his right arm had brightly colored green hair, which might have been shoulder length had it not been teased out in every direction. She wore a double-stranded necklace of seashells about her neck and a needle through the top of one ear. The one on his left arm was scarlet-haired, the red of ripe apples, not the more natural strawberry blonde of Juliana's, and wore hers in four braids, two pulled forward over each shoulder. This one wore no necklace, but the clatter of beads as she walked made him guess that perhaps her loincloth was naught but stranded beads. Kairos pointedly did not look. Kairos was finding it hard to look anywhere at all on the island without embarrassment. He was a head taller than either of his escorts, so even looking down at their faces, which smiled up guilelessly each time they noticed his attention, was an invitation to blush as he saw too much else. The two who had claimed him took him off to a long bench at the sand's edge, made from a felled tree and carved flat and made smooth on the top surface. They waded through a throng of cheerful Denku on the way there, smiling at him, touching him, offering greetings or blessings. It was hard to tell which, since Kairos could barely distinguish words among their speech, let alone put meaning to them. Once they were seated, the girls began fussing over him. He was touched and felt, and they talked past him to each other considerably. They pressed close against him on either side, and managed to arrange it such that each of his arms encircled one of them. Kairos hardly knew how to resist, and was beginning to wonder why it was occurring to him to try, as he could hardly touch any place on them in any modesty to push them away. Drinks were brought around in bowls, not much smaller than dinner plates. The two girls, whose hands were free when they chose them to be, held the bowl to Kairos's lips so that he did not need to release them from his embrace to drink. The liquid was slightly thick, not quite a syrup, and sweet, with just a hint of alcohol to it. It was delicious. Some sort of fermented melon, if he had to guess. And the three of them shared it. Kyrus saw others from the crew come join the revelry, but he paid them little mind. His attention was being drawn to the area immediately beneath each of his arms by the attentions of the two young lasses, who seemed intent on keeping it all for themselves. When the feasting started, they took spits of the meat from some furry animal the hunters had killed.
Halfway between a bear and a badger.
And fish as well as fruits from the island. As with the drink, they held the spit up for him as well, feeding him like a Tikalish prince. As the night wore on, the music played and drunken men and women danced about the fires. Drinks were replaced when they were emptied, and spits of meat came regularly. At some point, Kyrus had his tunic confiscated. He was a bit fuzzy on the how, but figured out the who easily enough, and the two girls curled more closely against him,
their warmth contrasting with the pleasantly cool night breeze on his back.
The girl to his left had marveled at his tattoo, tracing it with her fingers and kissing it. It seemed like they thought it was a symbol of status, or perhaps his prowess as a warrior. Well, perhaps it is at that. Kyrus felt guilty somewhere in his heart. He longed for home, but the night was surreal and dreamlike, in a way his dreams never were. It seemed magical, but not in the way that he was growing to understand magic. Kyrus allowed the revelry to sweep him up and away, like a leaf borne on the wind. He was not Brannis, nor were these girls betrothed of anyone he had ever met.